Pop stars from Lady Gaga to Madonna to U2 have cited David Bowie as a main influence, a genius even. But in a new biography about the life of one of pop music's most innovative stars, Paul Trinka writes about how David Bowie carefully cultivated that image. In fact, Bowie never believed he had much talent at all. Trinka spent years interviewing hundreds of people who have known David Bowie. The story of his life begins in the hardscrabble London neighborhood of Brixton, a part of the city that was still in ruins after the end of the Second World War.
He's got a favourite work called Dystopian, and from the today's perspective, it's kind of quite science fiction, his upbringing. So you've got a lot of showbiz, you've got vaudeville entertainers who used to live there, but at the same time, you've got these little rows of Victorian houses and just raised fields, and that's where the kids used to play. So it was a very specific upbringing in time and space.
He was in a series of sort of pop bands and almost boy bands, really from the age of 15 onward. He sort of breaks out in 1969. He's only 22 years old, and he has this song, Space Oddity.
Ground control to Major Tom. Ground control to Major Tom.
He claimed that it was supposedly inspired by the actual Apollo 11 moon landing. Is that true?
The song was really inspired more than anything by going to see Kubrick's movie 2001, A Space Odyssey. And also, it was typical of many elements of his career. It was a mix of kind of inspiration and marketing, because he came across this song and then realized straight on that with the moonshot coming up, that it represented a terrific marketing opportunity. And he used it to basically speed up and to market the single in the hope that that would be his breakthrough.
2 years later, he puts out another record that, again, is regarded as a seminal Bowie work, Hunky Dory. Lyrically, it's impossible to believe that this was written by a man just 24 years old.
I'm closer to the golden dawn, immersed in Crowley's uniform of imagery. I'm living in a silent film, portraying Himmler's sacred realm of dream reality.
This album and this song is filled with references to Aleister Crowley and Nietzsche and German fascism and all these very complex ideas. Where was he getting them from? Because he finished high school, but David Bowie was not an educated man. I mean, at this point, he was writing about some pretty big ideas.
He always engaged with the big ideas. It has to be said that early on, he was probably more adept at dropping names than of developing very deep philosophies. Mm. So in many respects, a lot of what we hear on Hunky Dory is quite conventional. And it's a real testament to how human beings can transform themselves. You know, as a child, there's a beat boom musician, he wasn't a particularly good musician. He was a fairly dreadful songwriter early on. And then by having this self-belief and this way of converting admirers to his cause, in the end, he'd actually become the genius that he'd convinced people he already was. He wasn't like Elvis, who just seemed to pop out of the womb that way. So I do believe this story is a great one of transcending the limitations with which you're born.
I'm speaking with Paul Trinka. He's the author of a new biography of David Bowie, and it's called Starman. Paul, he kind of adopts this persona, this kind of androgynous persona, and it becomes his shtick. I mean, it becomes part of who he wants to be, getting to the point where he basically proclaims that he's gay.
Yes, he basically tells Melody Maker, I'm gay, and I always have been, even when I was David Jones.
And at that point, he was married, we should say. He had married Angela
Barnett. Absolutely. And so again, you know, what we're seeing here is somebody with a very sophisticated understanding of the power of press. He knew exactly the power of those words. He was also pretty sincere. And in some ways, he was championing a lifestyle. So it operated on every level. It fitted in with the music. It was linked to an amazing aesthetic. He was dressed like somebody from Mars. He had these jumpsuits that he'd commissioned from a gay fellow who lived in the house with him. He'd cut his hair short, just signalling that the 60s are over and something new is about to start.
Licky played guitar, jamming good with Webb and Gilly and the spiders from Mars.
David Bowie's character, Ziggy Stardust, this persona he adopts, who was Ziggy Stardust? Where did he come from?
Ziggy was this magnificent creation. He combined the 50s and Eddie Cochran. He was heavily influenced by Iggy Pop, Iggy, Ziggy. So he was a kind of assemblage, and via this persona, Ziggy, he could become this lost, flamboyant hero.
Making love with his ego. Ziggy is sucked up into his mind.
What's amazing to me, Paul, about David Bowie is this period, the 1969 to 19. Really, to 1982. It's such a fruitful period. He produces so many incredible pieces of music. And for a lot of that time, he's strung out. I mean, he is a cocaine addict.
The period of serious cocaine addiction, really, it centers on the album Station to Station.
Well, which some critics consider his greatest.
Well, it was certainly his most intense album. And you can see that in many ways the cocaine improves to his work. So the kind of damage he did to his brain and the extreme experiences were a big part of his art.
He spent some time during the late 70s in Berlin. That is where he teams up with Brian Eno and Iggy Pop. And, of course, the Berlin Trilogy comes out of this period. But Heroes is the song that becomes his best-known song from that period.
By Heroes, he could express himself incredibly simply. He was actually improvising the lyrics, using a technique he'd seen his friend Iggy, or Jimmy as he called him, use, where he'd just write the words or improvise them and then sing them just a few seconds later. So when those words, you know, ring out across a huge recording studio in Hansa, just near the Berlin Wall, that's the first time they've actually filtered into his brain, and there's a wonderful freshness there.
Six years after Heroes, Bowie releases Let's Dance. This is a song that a lot of Bowie fans did not like. A lot of critics just thought it was a one-off thing. But this is the only song David Bowie ever sang that reached number one both in the U.S. and in Britain.
Let's Dance gets a lot of guilt by association because the music that came after it was really quite derivative and uninspired. But Let's Dance as an album even stands up today because sonically it's so unique. It's very minimal. There's a fantastic beat to it.
Basically, for the last 15 years of his life, he hasn't produced any really notable music. Do you think that will affect the way people remember him?
That there was a certain drop in quality over a certain period, but at the same time, in terms of how he's refashioned the sound of today, his impact's bigger than most other people. I would say it's probably bigger than Hendrix. It's bigger than rock bands like Led Zeppelin, because he's had an incredible influence on every level in terms of what we demand of our artists, that they do change, they progress from album to album. And certainly any time you listen to music that's got synthesizers and a funky beat, when you listen to Blur or Arcade Fire or Mercury Rev, there's an entire aesthetic that he's invented. So I think as time goes on, his contribution will be more and more valued.
I know Bowie fans will be disappointed that we've just scratched the surface, but what a fascinating book. That's Paul Trinka. He's author of the new biography, David Bowie, Starman. He joined us from London. Paul Trinka, thank you very much.
Thank you, Guy. An absolute pleasure.
And for Saturday, that's Weekends and All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Guy Raz. Remember, you can hear the best of this program on our podcast. Subscribe or listen at iTunes or at npr.org/weekendATC. We post a new episode every Sunday night. We're back with a whole new hour of radio tomorrow. Until then, thanks for listening and have a great night.